You're listening to The Profile.
Hi, welcome to The Profile podcast. I'm Andy Peck. For the past 17 years, I've been interviewing Christian leaders in the church and charity worlds and in the wider culture. It was John Maxwell who famously said, "Leadership is influence." It's our prayer that these conversations will help you in whatever spheres you have influence for God, whether in the home, at church, in your workplace, or elsewhere. The show is brought to you by Premier Christianity Magazine, the UK's leading Christian magazine. Get full online access and the print magazine every month by becoming a subscriber. See special offers available now at premierchristianity.com. It is sadly true that churches have not always had a good track record when it comes to integrating people from different ethnic and cultural backgrounds. Few Christians in leadership would want to have a monocultural church, but in practice, there are a range of challenges in creating a church that's truly multicultural. It's also the case that in the UK, churches with a congregation made up of those from an ethnically or culturally distinct population, very few have actually functioned well, perhaps in the short term, but questions have been raised about how sustainable they are long term. Well, I'm joined on the Leadership Show this week by Colin Edwards, who has considerable experience of living and working in cross-cultural contexts. He is originally from New Zealand, and having studied medicine, had a first career in South Asia, working in health and development for 17 years. He completed a PhD in mission and theology in cross-cultural contexts, and in moving to the UK, worked in mission education with Redcliffe College. So I'm looking forward to chatting about what we might look for within church and mission when it comes to cross-cultural work, both within a country and particularly, of course, within the UK. So welcome, Colin, to the Leadership Show.
Thank you, Andy. Good to be here.
So let me give you a scenario that was evident to me, Colin, to start with. I worked with a charity that was delivering pastoral care training. I was invited to lead the course in the Tottenham area of North London. As the day approached, I thought, I'll log on to the website, discover a bit about the church. And it found that it was predominantly Ghanaian, 90%+, with people coming from across the London from who were ethnically Ghanaian to meet at this church. So this was an ethnically focused approach. And that's, of course, not untypical of some churches in the UK. Sometimes that's in the label. They are the Chinese church or whatever. And there's generally little connection with the neighborhood where the building's located. So you must be familiar with that kind of model.
Yes. Yeah. There are several types of churches like that. And what that church is exemplifying is two factors. At the same time, one is, as you say, the ethnic monoculture aspect to it. And a lot of churches do that. And in fact, a lot of churches do that accidentally, without really meaning to, but have grown in an area that is of a certain class and a certain ethnicity. The other aspect that you're just talking about there is the idea of a gathered church rather than a local church. And those two things have intermingled there. And I certainly have a very similar church just down the road from me here. So that area of having an ethnic focus that may or may not be deliberate is well worth sort of honing down on and having a look. When I left South Asia, I came to the UK and was working in church growth. And I thought, well, I really got to spend some time understanding the church here. I'm foreign. So I spent 2-3 years just traveling. Part of it was traveling around, meeting different churches, looking at different models, and also seeing the experiments that mission had brought from abroad into the UK. One of the experiments was of people like myself who had been somewhere, South Asia, elsewhere, and come back to the UK and go, you know what? I'm not British anymore. I'm sort of this funny hybrid and I don't feel at home. And such people then sort of go, oh, look, here's my people. You know, they're speaking Urdu, they're speaking Bengali. And I feel really at home here. And here's the food that I've grown to love. And the local church has sort of said, Yeah, we know these people are here, but we don't really have, we don't have the first clue of how to begin to interact. So there were a group of experiments of people going, well, I'll move in, I'll speak the language, we'll look to develop a church that is of this nature. And there were these experiments of deep cross-cultural churches, often planted by missionaries coming back home, often started by missionaries coming back home and using a second language, whether that's Urdu or Bengali or something else, and seeing how that grew. The interesting thing there was often there was a start, but they didn't build in the DNA of change. And therefore, you've got granddad who may have a big beard and speaks Urdu, the son who has a clipped beard and speaks Urdu in English, and grandson who doesn't speak Urdu.
Right.
And with that form of church did not know how to cater for the change that was occurring across generations. And so we saw this set of experiments of deep cross-cultural churches being planted that ossified and aged and died. So that was one experiment. The other experiment is the one that you've sort of highlighted, where people have come from abroad and started their own cultural home church, whether that's Ghanaian or Nigerian or Chinese or Nepali. I know some lovely Nepali churches. And they tended to be better at catering for change because they were people going through the process of change and growing into change. But there is still this tension, particularly around young people, as to a fear is that are they going to become British and all the bad things that Western culture is throwing around? And how do we keep to value well that which is from my home culture, and how do we keep our young people valuing that? So that is always a tension. And in cultures that look to the past in time, and you talk to young people in those churches, they feel that tension very, very much. And so those were two experiments that I saw and watched grow, and saw the strengths in them and saw the weaknesses in them.
Right. Well, maybe we can unpack some of that in the course of the conversation, Colin. I'm not a missiologist, but I know enough about McGavran's homogeneous unit principle. Which I looked it up. A homogeneous unit is a section of society in which all members have some characteristic in common. So the idea is that in evangelism, Turks reach Turks, Greeks reach Greeks, Brits reach Brits, because we know the culture, et cetera, et cetera. So my Ghanaian friends in North London, they could reach Ghanaians much more easily than Brits could. So in that sense, there's some value, I guess.
This isn't an idea that grew up in missions abroad. And it had a certain place, but that place just grew way out of proportion, and I think it became quite destructive. But what McGavran was really looking at is, say, in a place like South Asia, where the traditional church has often used Hindu terms. So the word for God is Thakur, which is a Thakur is one of the names of the pantheon of gods. And if you're talking to someone who's Muslim and you talk about doing puja, worship to Thakur, well, you've instantly just set up this massive wall, because a Muslim colleague is sort of going, well, there's only one god, and you've just mentioned the name from a pantheon, and puja is what you do to idols, and idolatry is the biggest sin you can commit. So there's this. There are these high barriers, even in that simple term, let alone dress and diet, and facial hair, etc., etc. And McGavran was really pointing to, we don't need people to change culture. I don't need to become Korean in order to worship God. I can be a Kiwi. I can be a New Zealander and worship God as a New Zealander, and my Muslim colleagues in South Asia can stay in their culture and keep their names and keep their diet, etc., etc., and still worship, still follow Jesus. So in that point, that was good. But the problem that grew out of that was the idea, the what and is, this is what happens, you know, as a Western doctor, when I work in England, my colleagues are Western doctors and nurses, or Egyptian doctors and nurses, but of a very sort of educated level. And of course, as I talk about Jesus, that's where the church will grow. And I can't expect people who work in other jobs as mechanics actually to grow very easily unless I happen to live right next door to one.
Right.
So that's the homogeneous unit. That's the is at the homogeneous unit points principle points out something that is. Unfortunately, that became an ought. This is how we should work.
Okay.
And then after that, it also became quite micro. Is you actually have a very thin layer of what should be. And so those two things wrapped up really have caused problems over the years.
Yeah, and it's kind of led to what could be known as a marketing-led approach. So you find out what your neighborhood is, what the age demographic would be, and then you tailor stuff, as it were, or tailor the gospel or approach to those. Now, there's a sense in which, of course, that happens instinctively to some degree. You will play music that's appropriate for the age group or whatever in your church, but nevertheless, it can blur the lines between the truth and proselytizing in an inappropriate way, perhaps. So Colin, can I just ask you, what are the New Testament principles that should govern our evangelism and equipping? And kind of, if you're a leadership team, and many listening to this will be on leadership teams in local churches, they want to reach people, and maybe they look out and they think, crumbs, we're not bad at reaching a particular category of people, but we're lousy at culturally distinct people. So what should be the principles, and how might they go about it?
Sure, I'm going to start sort of slightly left field and come back
Yeah,
to
sure.
this. The whole I like the idea of koinonia or koinonia. As a Greek word, if you were not reading Paul's letter, if you were using that word just in everyday language at Paul's time, what would you mean? You actually tended the predominant meaning was of a business partner. Didn't mean fellowship of getting together. It meant someone I was in business with, which of course in that culture was usually family. You did business with family and often within guilds as well. So quite a tight-knit community. So but the point of it was that you were family and business at the same time. So you would sit round and like coming from New Zealand, I've certainly been at the dinner table on a farm where the family were talking about what was going on in the farm. And okay, so what's going to happen out in the back paddock? Do you need to have, and it's sort of being together and talking business with the father sort of figure, sort of drawing out from the rest of the family what they need, what resources can be shared, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's a lovely picture of church, just that we're all around the table together. With our father looking at both being family and doing the family business, which of course for us is the kingdom, the values and the outworking of the kingdom and justice and growth and love, etc., etc. And so if we then look at how that was worked out in Acts, we notice in Acts where the Greek widows were being overlooked, and when that was seen. They didn't just appoint one person to see to the problem. Actually, they said, we need seven people. And those seven people, which matched the it was resources weren't just it wasn't just a small token thing. Go, actually, we really need to address this in a full way. And so there were these seven deacons looking at this whole area. And that's, I think a wonderful expression of how the church we see something under God, and we go, okay, how do we really put resources, not just token resources, but really full resources to what we see God is leading towards us. And then the last thing I think that come is about this is that while churches tend to have developed their own culture, we're open to multiple cultures. And in Acts, the real wrestle was, do people have to become change cultures in order to follow Jesus? And that was, no, you can be Greek and follow Jesus. You can be Jewish and follow Jesus. And my Muslim friends, colleagues can be stay in their Muslim culture, but follow Jesus. They don't need to change their names, et cetera, et cetera. And so we can have we're looking towards the family, which is, I love Michael Goheen's comment, which is the gospel is irreducibly multicultural, that we need the fullness of cultures to be fully kingdom and fully gospel. And that's the fullness of family under God.
And I understand that some multicultural churches, Colin, might have ethnic groups within them. So, maybe they're a church, I don't know, 200 or 300, and maybe they've got 50 who are, if you like, a monochrome culture, and they form a small group, so that they would worship multiculturally. But then that small group can have their own sense of identity as well. Is
And if
that
we look at
wise, do you think?
this is another model. I mean, one of the models we talked about was deep cross-cultural second language church. The second model we looked at was the one of people starting their home culture here in a different culture. A third one is of a larger church allows for small groups, cell groups, and deliberately focuses a couple of those as being home for people for multicultural, whether that's people coming from refugees or who are refugees and asylum seekers, whether that's looking at people who are, who just live close and going, actually, if as part of this sub part of the greater family, we have our own identity, which is multicultural. And allows for all the fullness that multiculturalism brings, whether that's food, whether that's approach to worship, whether that's approach to time, all sorts of things. And but within the larger church, that's certainly a third model. One of the issues there, and I've just recently changed church because of care needs of a family member, and the church that I've joined up is to has really spoken to me. It's really been an eye-opener because this church has several cohorts within it. One is of people with special needs coming in wheelchairs and other special needs. There's a cohort of people who are refugees and asylum seekers. There's a cohort of people who are aged 80 and above. And I was teasing the church leader the other day, saying, "Look, we don't make the people with special needs welcome." And they were slightly taken aback because the reason is it's their church. You don't welcome people to their own church. They are part of the welcome. And that's really struck me that each cohort was not othered. They weren't some other group that was made welcome each week. But it was their church. It is their church. They are part of the welcome for others. And I think that's a church that sort of makes space through small groups for multicultural engagement. It has to be slightly careful not to other them, but actually have help them see themselves, help them be part of the church. They are part of the welcome for others. I spoke at a Spring Harvest event a while ago, and a lovely Turkish lady came up to me and said, "Do you mind if I say something? I agree with all you say, but do you mind if I add something?" I said, "Sure." And she said, and she spoke to the group, to the audience there, and she said, "I'm not a trophy. I'm a sister." And I thought, oh, that really struck home, that these small groups are not to trophy people, that to help us all feel at home, but actually also an ownership of homeness, an ownership of being family.
I mean, Colin, you've described different models, and as I understand it, you think there's kind of strengths and weaknesses to each. And I guess your advice to leaders is kind of work out what's appropriate for your gathering within the New Testament principles that you're suggesting. Presumably, if it's a multicultural church, it would be important, for example, that the leadership would have representation of different cultures itself.
Yeah, and thanks for picking that up, Andy. Yeah, I'm not against any of these models. They all have their place. I do think that the strongest model in most situations is the one where there is a larger church with smaller cell groups that allow for the flourishing. But I do think there is roles for the other churches. And leadership in each one needs to think through what are the strengths and weaknesses of the type of role that we have. Yes, I think leadership needs to really give voice to the fullness of the subcultures and cultures that are part of that worshiping community. And I think too here I would state that class is as important as different ethnic cultures. One of the best discussions I had was when I was up north, and I met up with a church who they had two distinct classes of people. There was a class of people where unemployment was rife, and it was also happened to be a church where there was a gathered professional community, so people driving into the center of the city as part of the church. And these two, and the leadership was going, we've really had to work of how do we not patronize, allow one group to patronize the other, but actually develop leadership that is key, and that speaks to the other groups. So allowing leadership to grow up from amongst the class of people where unemployment and zero hours contracts, etc., they were key parts of the leadership, actually speaking to and inputting to the lives of the more professional gathering part of the community. And I learned a lot from that conversation, sort of valuing and flourishing each part, so that the whole is much more, the sum of the parts is some of the whole is much more than the sum of the parts.
No, well said. Thank you, Colin. And certainly there have in recent years been books and courses run to try and identify particularly the working class stroke middle class divides within the UK. You will know probably that typically local churches have sprung up more in middle class areas in the UK, and working class areas have tended to be churches are less vibrant for whatever reason. And, you know, that's for others to analyze, but certainly there's a different culture. You know, there's a book culture in the middle class that doesn't always exist in the working class. And there's certain values, subtle values.
Yeah,
that,
very much so.
You know, that some working class people in the middle class church have felt very, very distant because of the assumptions made about them. Which have been inappropriate and unhealthy, and that goes against the koinonia that you expressed so wonderfully earlier.
Yes, yeah, and it's seeing this panoply of cultures and subcultures that each is valuable, each has a huge amount to offer, and each fills out the kingdom of God in a way that is absolute gold. And it's helping each group flourish and speak to the others and know that they're valued in giving to the others.
Well, sadly, time's pretty well gone, Colin, in terms of our time. We've kind of poked at a few issues,
Few things, yes.
yes, and without being able to, just because of the nature of the time. Are there particular books that have helped you in your studies that come off the top of your head that if people are thinking, yeah, this is an issue for us, it will be useful for me to, I mean, Leslie Newbegin is one that many look to. I don't know if that was one that you valued.
We've got Leslie Newbegin, of course, came from South Asian culture into back to the UK. So he speaks very much from my sort of experience. Theologically, Kenneth Bailey, particularly Jesus Through Middle Eastern Eyes, just helps open our understanding that there are cultural ways of reading,
Yes.
and to let other cultures really speak to us. Lastly, to change topic again, I've just written in big letters here with exclamation marks after it, pray. It's that actually in spending time in prayer as leaders and as church and as groups to go, actually, Lord Jesus, how do we follow you here and now? What are you leading us into? And that there is absolutely no getting past it. The
No
more we
substitute, yeah.
spend, and no sub, thank you, that's the word that I was after. There's no substitute for it. But the more we spend time in prayer, both as individuals and as leadership and as in cohorts, mixed cohorts, then the more we will find under Christ this coming togetherness.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Colin. Really appreciate all that you shared.
It's been a pleasure.
That was my conversation with Colin Edwards, looking at the challenges of multicultural church. This may be a pressing issue for you, or maybe one that you know you need to investigate. So I hope our chat gives you some pointers on some of the models that exist and some of the areas that you may need to consider in seeking to involve perhaps a wider group of culturally or ethnically mixed people within your congregation. And I'm sure Colin's encouragement to seek the Lord is an apt one. As we pray, the Lord will lead us, I'm sure, to the right approaches. So this is Andy Peck, thanking you for your company and looking forward to the next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
If your brain is at full capacity with to-dos, birthdays, and dinner plans, meet Skylight Calendar. It syncs your entire family's schedule onto a sleek digital display so you focus on important things like where you left your coffee. Right now, Skylight is offering our listeners $30 off their 15-inch calendars by going to skylightcal.com/talk. Go to skylightcal.com/talk for $30 off your 15-inch calendar. That's skylightcal.com/talk.